Morning. Today's Daf Nida is Mem Dalet. We are starting today on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. And we are continuing our discussion yesterday of Sheikh Vazera. Sheikh Vazera, the topic of discussion yesterday in the Gemara Nida Daf Mem Gimel. We discussed various aspects of Sheikh Vazera. When is it Metame? How exactly does they have to discharge out of the man in order for it to be Metame? You go back to Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. There were three statements by Shmuel. Regarding what exactly is the qualification, what is the definition of Sheikh Vazer in terms of the Sheikh Vazer that is going to be Metame. We dealt with an assortment of other questions, questions of Rebbe yesterday. We dealt with a Zav discharge. And now we are starting on the middle of Mem Gimel Amud Beis, Amar Rav Chani La Mishum Rav Elazar Rav Yishim Sheikh Vazer L'Roah B'Mashehu. So how much needs to emerge, how much needs to discharge in order for the person to become Tameh? So the Gemara quotes, in the name of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, that is, for Sheikh Vazer, it's a mashu, any amount, which is consistent to what we've been saying up until now, because, again, it's a riyah, a discharge. And when it comes to Anita, how much needs to discharge out of a woman to become for her to be Tameh, that is a mashu. And the same thing we said regarding Zava. And this is a consistent position that the Gemara has been taking, that for a discharge, for a tumas re'iyah, so the amount that comes out is not significant. The fact that something came out, that's significant. But here's where it gets exciting, l'nogeya b'chadasha. However, in order to be tame for coming into contact with the zera, and as we've discussed already numerous times, but let me reiterate and just emphasize that when we're talking about the Sheikh Vazera, we're talking about the man who discharged it, who's Tameh, and the actual Zera itself. The actual Zera itself is also going to be an Avatama. And what the Gemara now is distinguishing is that for the person who is experiencing the discharge, he's going to become Tameh when any amount comes out. But as far as the Zera itself is concerned, the Zera itself is only going to be a source of Tama only when it is a Shear, the Shear of an Adasha. Now, the Gemara is really bothered by this. V'hanan Tameim b'chol shein tanan. And that's not our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that it's Tamei B'choshehu, which means that our Mishnah told us that there is no Shear. So, my love, l'nogeyelo l'roa. Now, the Gemara assumes that the Mishnah was talking about the actual Zera itself, and the Gemara says no. The Mishnah was describing only the man experiencing the discharge. He's going to be Tamei with a Mashehu, with a Kolshehu. But as far as the Zera itself is concerned, you need a Shear, and the Shear is an Adasha, size of a lentil. Tashma, the Gemara quotes a Tosefta, Chomer B'shech Vazer mi B'sheretz. And so the Tosefta, as Bryce's do, is comparing one tumah to another tumah. So here we're comparing, we're putting side by side the tumah of Sheikh Vazera and the tumah of Sheretz. V'chomer b'sheretz mi b'sheikh Vazera. So each one of them has a chomer over the other. Chomer b'sheretz sheretz ein chaluka tumah, ma she'en ke b'sheikh Vazera. So when it comes to Sheretz, you know there's no distinction in tumah. Now what that means exactly, we're going to see in just a moment. But when it... Well, we'll see. We'll see what that means. But when it comes, that's not true, but when it comes to Sheikh Vazera. Okay, what does that mean? Again, we're going to see. Chomer b'Sheikh Vazera, she'a Sheikh Vazera metame b'chol shehu, ma she'in ki b'sheretz. Ah, but when it comes to the Sheikh Vazera, there's a Chomer of the Sheikh Vazera in that. How much is it, how much of it do you need in order for it to become a source of Tuma? A kol shehu. When it comes to a Sheretz, so there is a Shear. So by Zera, there's no Shear, and by Sheretz, there is a Shear. So we all think we know what that means, meaning the first half of the brisa, we don't, not, at this point in time, have pshat. But with the second half of the brisa, we know what that means. So my love, l'nogeya, so the Gemara says, aren't we talking about contact with the Zera itself? And if that's correct, what the brisa now is saying is that for the Zera itself, there doesn't have to be a Shear. And again, that goes against Rebbe Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Lo l'rawa, and again, the Gemara deflects, the same deflection. No, we're talking about the man who experienced the discharge. Gemara says, no, come on. We're comparing Sheikh Vazera to a Sheretz. Now, the Sheretz is coming, the transmission of Tumah by Sheretz is through Nogeya. So we're talking about the same thing by Sheretz, right? And the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. We just mean the concept of Tumah by Sheretz. The concept of Tumah by Sheikh Vazera. But we could be saying the correct pshat. It could very well be that the Sheretz is talking about the discharge where there it's a kol shehu, and the Sheikh Vazera is talking about the discharge, and the Sheretz is talking about the actual contact. But it could be that we're saying the correct pshat in the Braisa, and we're defending Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. The Sheretz l'metame b'mashu v'anan tanan. The Gemara says, now let's go to Sheretz for just a moment. Sheretz, you need a shear. Is that true? The Gemara quotes a Mishnah Oalos. Ha'ivarim ein lam shear. Pachos mecha zayis basar. I'm eso pachos mecha zayis basar. Nevel pachos mecha adasha. min asheretz. So when it comes to a limb of a remains, and the Mishnah over here does, it says it doesn't matter if it's human remains or animal remains or even sheretz remains. If you have a full limb, even though it's less than a shear, so then it's going to be tameh. So the Gemara says, Shani Eva, Tekuli B'makom Adashakai. So the Gemara says, well, you're talking about a limb. That's not fair. A limb is a davar chashav. In fact, if you look at Rashi in the language of Rashi, I'm reading the Rashi, Dekule B'makom Kadashakai, Klomar, Mitoch HaShivusei, Shu Ever, Havi Chashav B'makom Kadashah. The shear of an Adashah, when it comes to a sheretz, what is the significance of a shear? It's a davar chashav. It's a significant amount. If you have an Aver, so that also is a davar chashav. So even though the Aver itself may be less than a less than the Adasha, but still it substitutes for an Adasha because you have a shear. Da'ilu chasiporto Aver mika metamia, and the Gemara just emphasizes this point, and the Gemara says, look, if I less than a less than the limb, meaning it didn't have the full limb, I had 90% of the limb, 80% of the limb. That, so and now what I have remaining of the limb is less than an Adasha. We all know it's not going to be tameh. So it's the fact that it's a full limb, which is basically a substitution for a shear. Shichlat zera dechalukah to mamai. Okay, so after the back and forth, what have we done so far? Tried to challenge Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, and we ended up defending Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And this distinction of, for the ro'eh of shichlat zera, that's a kol shehu, everyone agrees. For the negia with the shichlat zera, so Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon says it has to be the shear of an adasha. And at this point in time, we have defended that position. We quoted a brisa, and the first half of the brisa, we just glossed over it. And now the Gemara wants to go back and say, can we say pshat now in the first half of the brisa? We were comparing shichva zera to sheretz, and we noted that there's a chumra by shichva zera over that of sheretz. And the Gemara says, shichva zera dechaluka to maso. Sorry, other way around. There is a chumra by sheretz than over shichvat zera, and the Gemara says that when it comes to shichvat zera, it's chalukah to maso. You know, there's a distinction to be made in shichvat zera. Not so, however, when it comes to sheretz. Gemara says, what did the Braisa mean by that? Mahi. Ilei meben Yisrael ledenachrim. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're making a distinction between Jew and non-Jew. Shichvat zera comes out of a Jew, avatumah. Shichvat zera comes out of a non-Jew, not tamei at all. And again, going back to the fourth parak. So the Gemara said declaratively that the shichvat zera of a non-Jew is not tamei, not midaraisa, not midarabanan. It's not tamei at all. So the Gemara says hachanami ika achbar diyam va'achbar diyabasha. So the Gemara says, okay, but if you want to try to make that distinction within shichvat zera, you know we can make the exact same distinction within shratzim as well. Meaning I'll find a sheretz, a land sheretz, and its complementary sea sheretz is going to be tahor, right? The Gemara in Chulin Rashi here quotes it. Right, everything that exists on land, there's a counterpart in the sea, right? Seahorse. So the anyway, within Shratzim, so you can have a sheretz that's tameh, and then you can have a complementary counterpart sheretz, which is tahor. So what are you telling me that by shichvat zera there's a chaluka and by sheretz there's no chaluka? That can't be pshat. Okay, so that's not pshat. What is pshat? Ela ben katan legadon. So the Gemara says, the Pshat is as follows. When we say Chalukah B'tumah, by Sheikh Vazera, what we mean by that is, an adult having a discharge, that's an Avatumah. But if, let's say, you had a Katan, and Katan over here probably is referring to someone under 9 years of age, because again, over 9 years of age, he's a Ben Bia, he has the physical ability, the Gemara says throughout, to have Bia. So anyway, but the point is that if you have a minor that has any kind of express, any kind of discharge of Zera, so that's not going to be that's not going to be tummy. That's what the pshat in the brisa is. When it comes to a sheretz, so it doesn't matter at what age the sheretz is, meaning the sheretz. You touch the dead corpse of the sheretz, you're tummy. Okay. I'm Rav Papa Ketanai. Okay, and so let's recap. We've been deliberating now, since the beginning of this morning, whether or not, when it comes to shichvat zera, so for the discharge of shichvat zera, kol shehu. We're all in agreement. Once the shichvat zera comes out and the zera itself now is an avatumah, so how much of it do you need to become tameh? So without the Gemara, if we only had the Mishnah, we would have said a kol shehu. But now we're saying a chiddush. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says you need the shear of an adasha. And the Gemara went back and forth on this, and the Gemara is going to continue on this discussion until the bottom of the Amud. Kitanai. The Gemara says that it's machlokes atanaim. Minan the rabbis no geb b'shichvat zera tamalamar o ish. How do I know that there's a ribui for the nogeh b'shechvat zera? So the O is coming to tell me that we're being marbed, we're including even the shechvat zera itself. Meaning, not only is the person emitting the discharge going to be tame, but the actual zera itself is going to be tame, and we're learning it out through a ribui. And the ribui is from the fact that the Torah adds the word O ish. Now, upligi tanai ba'alma. Now, the Gemara goes on one step further and saying now, okay, good. So now we know it's a drasha. So what's the machlokus? So the machlokus is going to be predicated on the following. De'igadarmi domina mina v'igadarmi domina vuka basra. Okay. And so the Gemara says, look, whenever we have a ribui and we're now including a new category, so how does this extension work? So clearly we are starting, our starting point is that the roeh is tameh. The person who experienced the discharge is tamei, and now we're adding a new category of the actual zera itself, which is also going to be an avatama. Okay. Now, whenever going through an extension, we have this machlokas throughout shas. Don mina umina domina vuka basra. And let me spell this out. Don mina umina means as follows: that when I have a ribui, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go from the source to the destination, and don mina umina. And I'm going to say that whatever's true here, I'm going to extend it to its destination. And even though it may not necessarily contextually fit within the destination, you just keep going forward. That's don mina umina. Don mina vuka basra means as follows. I'm going to take the source halacha, move it to the destination halacha, but uka basra. I'm going to give it context. What context? Wherever I'm sending it to. Meaning if I'm sending it to another area, but that other area has other contextual contours to it, so I fit it into the context of where I'm sending it to. Okay? I know I said it really abstractly, but now let's put it in over here.
And
correct. Laman dharma domina mina ma sheretz benigia av shechva zera benigia umina. Ma sheretz bechadasha av shechva zera bechadasha. So the Gemara says as follows. Now, I'm learning over here, I'm sorry, the ribui, one mistake I made, so let's just quickly correct it, is that the ribui is going from sheretz to shechvat zera, right? That's the o-ish. Okay. Now, sheretz is benegia, shechvat zera is benegia. So we know that a sheretz, how does it transmit the tumah? So the answer, of course, is negia, nogea. It's tumas maga. And so the same thing is regarding shechvat zera. Shechvat zera is bemaga. Umina. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep darshaning. Meaning, domina umina tells me that the source is going to shape the entire halacha, and when I then apply to the destination, I give it no context. So if I'm learning it from sheretz to shechvat zera, so first of all, we establish that it's tumas maga. Fine. And also, what do we know regarding sheretz? You need a size of a shear of an adasha. So now when I send it to shechvat zera, I'm going to say the same thing. What does a shear of adasha have to do with shechvat zera? Nothing. But that's exactly the point. That's domina omina. When I send the halacha from sheretz over to shechvat zera, I don't care that adasha has nothing to do with zera. That doesn't matter. We just send it forward. So that's why you end up with this halacha that the shear of tumas maga with the zera itself is going to be the shear of an adasha. Now laman darmi domina vuka basra. Now let's go the other way. Let's say we said domina vuka basra. So ma sheretz benegiyah shechvat zera benegiyah. Okay. So first we're going to say that sheretz is tumas maga, so is zera, so is shechvat zera. V'uki ba'asra, ma shechvat zera l'roa b'mashu, af l'nogea b'mashu. But then you got to put in its context. Meaning, what does the shear of an adasha have anything to do with zera? Nothing. Okay. So since it has nothing to do with shechvat zera, so now I'm going to put in the context. When I say context, what do I mean? Here's what we all know, that when it comes to shechvat zera, the experiencing of a discharge of shechvat zera this year is a kolshehu. So therefore, the tumas maga of the actual zera itself also is going to be a kolshehu. Okay, that is the Gemara's formulation of this machlokus of for tumas maga of shechvat zera. Either it's going to be adasha or it's going to be a kolshehu, and the Gemara links it to the principles of domina mina versus domina vuka basra. I'm the Rav Huna Breda, Rav Nassan, Rav Papa. Mimai dimi o ish de sheretz kamar bilay. The Gemara says that you're assuming that the drasha is coming from the word o ish, which is in relation to sheretz, and we're taking the halacha from sheretz and moving to shechvat zera. Doma mi o ish asher teitzi mimen shechvat zera kamar bilay. Right. If I could just defend my mistake, that I originally thought that the o ish was in reference to shechvat zera. The Gemara now is making the suggestion. Okay, so the O'ish, maybe the drush is coming internally within the parsha of Shechvat Zer itself. And everyone subscribes to the principle of domina mina. And some learn it like Rav Papa, and some learn it like Rav Huna Bered de Rav Nasan. Meaning, so now this machlokus in terms of the shear of Shechvat Zera, is it an adasha? Is it going to be a kolshu? So that could be the discrepancy between the Tanaim, the debate between the Tanaim. Okay, so where do we end up with all this? Just as a quick summary. So Shechvat Zera. So for the Roeh, agreement. That for the man who experiences a discharge of Shechvat Zera, so he's going to be Tameh. How much needs to come out? It's a kolshu because it's a Re'iyah. As far as the Nogeh is concerned, so we have a machlokus. Some are of the opinion that's a kolshu. Some are of the opinion that's an adasha. The Gemara gave voice to how to understand the machlokus. And as far as the halach is concerned, obviously the Shulchan Aruch is not going to pass on a tumah tahara because that's not what the Shulchan Aruch does. But as far as the Rambam is concerned, he goes like the shear of adasha for the tumas maga. Okay, we're on the Mishnah on the bottom of Mem Gimel Mid Beis Tinokus by Shom Echad. The Mishnah now wants to make the following point. When is a person eligible for Tuma? And then as long as we talk about the eligibility of a person regarding Tuma, we talk about the eligibility for many other halachas as well. Now, Tinokus bas yom echad metame benida. Here's a point that we've already said numerous times, but here's the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that when it comes to a infant girl, so she is eligible to become a Nida from the day that she's born. Literally the day she's born. Now, as we already know, the likelihood of her having any kind of discharge at the day she's born is highly unusual, but that's not the point. The point is that it doesn't matter. Age does not become a factor when she is subject to Tumas Nida. If she would have, it's a big if, but if she would have a discharge at this very young age, at this infancy stage of just being born, nevertheless, she would be considered, she would qualify as a Nida with being Tamea for 7 days. And Vas Yud Yamim Matame Beziva. And then what's the earliest time that she becomes a Zava Gadola? That's going to be on day 10. Because we know that you only become a Zava if you're first a Nida. And so if you had a discharge on the day you're born, so the next 7 days you're a Nida. And then that would mean day 8, 9, and 10, if she discharged for those 3 days, so then she would be a Zava Gadola. And again, the Mishnah's point is really straightforward. Is that from the day that a girl is born, so she's eligible to become a Nida or a Zava Gadola. Tinok ben yomecha metame beziva. Now, what about a man? So, when I say a man over here, I'm talking about an infant, but an infant male. So he is eligible to become a Zav even on the day of infancy. Umetame benegayim. Also, metame benega. Now, nega, of course, over here applies to both male and female, but the Mishnah now just moved on to the male, so the Mishnah is describing in the context of the male, but obviously it would be true by both male and female. Umetame benegayim. So if there is a Saras on the skin of even a day, old infant, so then he's subject to Tumas Negayim. Umetame betame meis. Also, Tumas meis. Rachmanus. If this one day old were to die, so the one day old would be subject to Tumas meis. Would be a source of Tuma. Vizokik liyibum. Also creating a Zika of Yibum. Creating a Zika of Yibum, look at the first Rashi in the Mishnah. Im nolad yom echad konami sasachiv. If, let's say, the baby was born, and on the day that the baby was born, so Rachmanus, his older brother, who is married, now has died, so now he has created a Zika. He is now bonded with his sister-in-law. He, this one-day-old infant, is bonded with his sister-in-law. So it's a real Rachmanus. You have both the death of his brother and now his sister-in-law, who is Zikuka. She is now, she is connected with this infant, and they're going to have to wait some time before he could do the mitzvah of Yibum. Upoter mina Yibum. Also, also creates a patur from Yibum. Meaning, if let's say he was born after the death of his father, meaning Rachmanus' father died, but left his wife pregnant, and then he comes into the world even for just an hour, says Rashi. So that means to say that now she had a child, and therefore not subject to the mitzvah of Yibam anymore. She doesn't have a Zika. Umachil b'truma, and can cause others to eat truma. What does this mean? Rashi. Rashi writes over here, Basi Sol Shenisos a Kohen. So you had a non-Kohen woman married to a Kohen, Umes. And he dies. V'nola la ben la'achar misaso. And she, although he dies, she left her pregnant. And then she had a baby. Now this baby, of course, is a Kohen. Ocheles bishvilo b'truma. Rashi says now that because she has a son who's a Kohen, she now, as the mother of a Kohen, can continue to eat truma. Rashi writes something really interesting.
It can't be immediate, though.
It's so funny you say that. Rashi says something really interesting. Bo bayom. So Rashi says that even on that very day, on the day in which the baby was born. Now, Ben points out, and I have it in a note on the side of my Gemara, that part of Rashi is really difficult to understand. Because on the day that she gave birth, she's Tami Tomas Leida. And so she can't be eating Shuma for the next week. If it's a girl, the next 2 weeks. So it's really interesting that Rashi writes that. But anyway. But
unless you're assuming that with a C-section, she survives the C-section.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's difficult. And Rashi's difficult. But the point is that the infant now is going to enable the mother to eat truma. I know that Rashi says bo bayom. I like your pshat. I think your pshat is correct. You know, I am getting a little bit fixed on the language of Rashi, but you're right. Wow. So anyway, so shenola kidichsiv vilid beiso heim yochlu belachmo. Rashi quotes the drasha. We're going to see the drasha a little bit later on this morning. But anyway, but as long as we're in Rashi. So the pasuk says that the children are going to be eating the lechem. I mean, lechem over here in the context means truma. And the drasha is ya'achilu, meaning yochlu, they eat, ya'achilu, they cause others to eat. Ya'achilu simam. Aval yinicha mu'uberes, eino ochels bishvilo ad shiulad. But pregnancy, however, is not an enabler. Just because she's pregnant with a Kohen does not allow her to eat truma. The baby has to actually be born. That's machil b'truma. Next in the Mishnah, back to the Mishnah. Uposel min truma and creates a psul from truma. What does that mean? So here we'll go with Rashi. Although Rashi right now gives us an initial version of what we think the Mishnah means, but it's important right now to understand. Rashi writes, "Kasach adacha kigon bas kohen shenisas liyisrael." So here we're describing a bas kohen married to a Jew. Umes and the Yisrael dies. Vihinich ben yom echad. So and now leaves her with a son. Now the son is obviously not a Kohen. So pasla mitrumas beis avia kol yemei chayav. Now as long as the son is alive, she now is going to be, even though she's a bas Kohen, even though she's not married to Yisrael anymore, but because she has a son who's Yisrael, so he's going to prevent her from eating truma. And the pasuk says dichsiv v'zerein la v'shavol beis avia. When can a bas Kohen go back to her family? That's only if she's left widow and she goes back without children. But now that she has a child, v'hayesh lazero, v'gmar parchafil uber nami poso. Now, Rashi points out, what's the problem with this? So we're going to see it together in the Gemara just a little bit from now. And that is that we know the halacha is that you don't have to wait till the birth of her Yisrael son for her to become prevented from eating truma. By virtue of the fact that she's pregnant, already is preventing her from eating truma. So the Mishnah is a little bit challenging, and the Gemara is going to raise this, and the Gemara is going to answer. Back to our Mishnah as we turn now to the top of Memdal Min Aleph, Venochel Manchel also can create inheritance, Yerusha. In other words, as a day old now, so he's able to inherit, and he's also able to bequeath. What exactly is happening over here? Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to explain that as well. V'harogo chayev, and if you kill such an infant. So you're going to be subject to the chiyuv of the death penalty. This is an important line of the Mishnah. It certainly sounds like in the Mishnah, anything prior to that is not ritzicha, is not murder. Okay. Now, we know that that we take abortion really seriously. And so it sounds like from the Mishnah that before it comes into this world, so then you're not going to be chayiv. So let's first make a very important distinction over here. The Mishnah's wording of chayiv over here, it's talking about when you're subject to the capital penalty, capital punishment. So the Mishnah could very well mean that you're only subject to the capital punishment only when you kill a baby that is born. meaning that for the fetus that's in utero, it could be, I'm saying a possible pshat in the Mishnah, not a definitive pshat in the Mishnah, but it could very well be that for in utero, it's still murder, you're just not going to be chayav misa. Mm-hmm. It's just there's no capital punishment, but it could very well be murder. This is a really large discussion, much larger than what I'm doing right now. I'm just simply highlighting that the Mishnah over here is not to be read simply that only when it's born is there going to be an issue of murder. It could be that it extends even an earlier point in time, and the Mishnah is just talking about the capital punishment. And to his father, to his mother, and to all the relatives, he's like a chassan. What does that mean? So stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in the Gemara. That's another ambiguous line of the Mishnah, which needs clarification. The Gemara will clarify. Okay. We're in Mem Dalam and Aleph, top of the Amud. We're starting with the Gemara. And the first part of today's daf, we're just going to be running through a number of drashas. And then later in the daf, we're going to be ironing out some of the more difficult parts of the Mishnah. The theme of the Mishnah, very simple, is that when you have a baby coming into this world, so postpartum, so now this baby has a lot of halachic consequences just being one day old. And the Mishnah over here in Nida went through all the various halachic consequences of now emerging into this world. And so the drashas. Let's start with the Gemara. I'm going to run through them a little bit quicker. The Gemara starts off, Tan Rabbanan Isha in Li Alisha, Bas Yom Echad Li Nida, Minayin Tam Alamar V'Isha. So the extra vav is a ribui telling us that even an infant is subject to Tumas Nida. So another pasuk with an additional vav in connection with zava. Next, tinok ben. Categorically, it's a great question. Categorically, it certainly sounds like from the Gemara that nida and ziva, even though they are related. And you obviously, Nida is a prerequisite to Ziva, but they still are viewed as categorically two separate types of Tumah.
They're interdependent.
Yeah. But you do need Nida as a prerequisite for Ziva. Okay.
And you need Ziva for Nida also.
Let me think more about that. Tinak ben Yom Echad, Minani Milton, Rabbanan Ish. So now we're up to the Zav discharge of a male. And for a one-day-old, if he were to have a Zav discharge, he'd be subject to Tumah Zav. So the double language, when the Torah introduces us to the parsha of Zav regarding a male, doubles the word Ish. So it tells us that now normally Ish is referring to a man, but that second Ish tells us even if he's not exactly a man, he's younger than a man. And when we say younger, we're talking about even a day old. So, right? Shemitame b'ziva, divra Rav Yehuda. That's Rav Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rav Yochanan ben Broka, Omer, Inu Tzarech. No, you don't need that drasha. Harehu Omer, v'hazav es zovo, l'zachar l'nekeva. So he bases on this pasuk, we use the word zachar. Now, zachar translates as the word male, and once you say zachar, you mean a male of any age. L'zachar koshu, ben gadol ben katan, l'nekeva koshihi, ben gadola ben katana. Imke matamalam ish ish. So then, what do you do with the double language? So, Dibur Torah Kolashem Bnei Adam, and the Gemara says, as it does very often, that this just the Torah speaks in a manner in which you and I speak. Umitame ben Nagaim, the Gemara says that there's Saras, a baby is eligible for Saras, Dichsiv, Adam Kiyebe, or Bisaro, Adam Koshehu. Well, that's an easy drasha because the Torah uses the word Adam. And Adam just simply defines as humanity, a human. Okay. As long as you are a nefesh, so then you're subject to Tumas Meis. That infant is subject to being a nefesh, and so therefore subject to Tumas Meis if Rachmanis, that infant, were to die. As far as the Zika is created, like we described back in the Mishnah, where the baby was born and after the birth of the baby, his older married brother died, so now a Zika has been created between this infant and his sister-in-law. It's a real state of Rachmanus, but that is the case, and the Gemara gives us the drasha. Upotim in a yibum, ubein ein loam rachmana v'ha islay. Any child is going to create a patur, meaning that if the widow was left with a pregnancy and she has a baby, so even if that baby, I'm going back to the Rashi and the Mishnah, even if that baby just survived for an hour, nevertheless, that creates a patur of yibum. We We already know this drasha. We saw it earlier this morning, back in the Rashi and the Mishnah, but the Gemara here presented it. Uposel min ha-truma, a disqualifier of truma, meaning now we're flipping the scenario. Previously we were talking about a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen and had a Kohen baby. Now what we're describing is the opposite. A Bas Kohen married to Yisrael. While married to Yisrael, she now no longer can eat truma. But if her husband dies, she can go back to her family. But if she had a baby, she can't go back to her family. So now the Gemara is going to ask the question which we already foreshadowed back in the Mishnah. Why are we saying that she is banned from going back to her family when she has a baby? She's banned from going back to her family even if she's pregnant. And the Gemara gives us a drasha. Kinu raha. The Torah describes when she goes back to her family, she's going to be like she was in her youth. Meaning, when in her youth, when she was single, she was not pregnant. And so that means that pregnancy is also going to create a ban, a restriction, of her going back to her Kohen family to eat truma. So our Mishnah is misleading. Our Mishnah sounds like in order for her to be banned and restricted, she has to have the baby. But we just learned now that that's not true. Pregnancy also creates a restriction. So Tzricha, the Gemara says, you're right and we're right. Meaning, both points are true. So the Gemara says, look, if I only had the pasuk of Vizera Ein La, so that means that if she comes back as two people, i.e. she had a baby, so then she's banned and restricted. But if she's just pregnant, so she's only one person, she left one person, she's coming back one person. Admittedly, it's not so hard to forecast what's going to happen. She's going to become two people, but currently, right now, she's one person, and so therefore she may eat. Kas rachmana ben nuraha. So that's the need of the drasha of nuraha. Ikas rachmana ben nuraha mishum di mikara gufa srika vashta gufa malya. And if I only had the drasha of nuraha, I would say, look, when can she go back to eating truma? That's if her husband dies, and in terms of her own physical condition, she's the same as when she was left, meaning not pregnant. But now that she's pregnant, she is what the Gemara describes as gufa malya. Okay, so it's not the same, and therefore she can't eat truma. But if she had the baby, so now she's going back to her family in the same state in which she left, not pregnant. So I might have thought that she should eat sricha. So I need both drashas. Okay, so a Bas Kohen who unfortunately lost her husband, her Yisrael husband. So we have a drasha that when she's pregnant she can't eat truma. We have a drasha that when she had a baby she can't eat truma. And the Gemara just explained the necessity of both of those drashas. Wait, I'm sorry, just give me one moment. Let me just finish the Gemara thread. Cry itrutz. So the Gemara says, that's great, meaning, okay, I now understand the need of both drashas. But let's go back to our Mishnah. But the Mishnah is still misleading. We haven't addressed the question of the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. The Mishnah says that when she has a baby and that baby is one day old, she then is restricted. It sounds like from the Mishnah that prior to that, during pregnancy, she's not restricted, but we just established that she is. So how do you understand the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, oh, so you're going to go to the Mishnah and you're going to give an ukimta, a circumstance in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is describing a Kohen that has two wives. Achas grusha v'achas shena grusha. Now, of these two wives that he married, one's kosher and the other's not kosher. Okay. Meaning, right, just understood in context, right, the non-grusha wife that he married, he did good. Right, he selected well. But then his second wife, who he married, which is a grusha. Cohen's not allowed to marry a grusha. Okay, v'yeshlo banim misha'enu grusha v'yeshlo ben yom echad min ha-grusha. So now she has sons. She had sons. She has sons from her. He had sons from both his kosher wife and his non-kosher wife. So the sons that he had from his kosher wife, so they're kosher, and so that's good. And so, but the problem becomes that also yeshlo ben yom echad min agrusha. So from the non-kosher wife, so they had a son, and the son right now is one day old. De poso ba'avdei aviv melecho b'truma. So a fascinating consequence now of having this one son, even though this one son is a day old. Now let's go over what just happened. The one son who's a day old is a halal. Because, again, his wife is a grusha. The marriage, the union of a Kohen and a grusha is an usur marriage. It's a marriage of Isser. the child they have now is qualifies as a halal. That means he's a kohen with no kedushas kohen, no privileges, no entitlement to eat truma, cannot eat truma. He's a halal. For all intents and purposes, he may go around with the name kohen, but he's not a kohen. Now that means that he can't eat truma. Now let's think about this in terms of Yerusha. The Yerusha goes now to all the sons of this man. The sons from his kosher wife and the sons from his non-kosher wife as well. Meaning even though she's not kosher, but nevertheless the marriage is not sanctioned, but it's recognized. Okay? And that means now that all the Yerusha goes, the entire estate now goes to all the sons. This infant now is a shareholder in the estate. Now prior to division, this shareholder of the estate now is somebody who, under normal circumstances, if he was a kosher kohen, would enable the estate to eat truma. The estate is eating truma, yes. Because as part of the estate we're discussing over here, you have avadim. An eved of a kohen is allowed to eat truma. That's what's called kinyan kaspo. And so over here, what this one-day-old is now doing is that because the one-day-old is a halal, he himself not allowed to eat truma, so therefore his share in the estate is going to prohibit, is going to prevent the avadim from eating truma. And it sounds like from the Gemara, agreed, it sounds like from the Gemara, all the kohanim cannot eat truma. Now once the estate... No, the father died.
Right.
And then once the estate is divided, so then the kohanim who are solely owned by the kosher kohanim can eat. The kosher, right. The avadim, thank you. The avadim now can eat. Ula fukim de Rav Yosi d'amar uber nami posel, kamash malam ben yonam echad in uber lo. And then, if this is the pshat in the Mishnah, it's some pshat in the Mishnah, but you have to say a pshat in the Mishnah, otherwise the Gemara's point is too strong. But now we're saying this pshat in the Mishnah, what's the point of the Mishnah? Meaning, okay, it's an unusual circumstance, and I get everything, but where's the chiddush? The chiddush is that our Mishnah is not subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that not only is the infant born going to create a psul for the estate, but even the ubar is also going to create a psul for the estate. That's an interesting shita. The Rashi over here quotes the Gemara Yevamos where this comes from. Rashi writes, just read one line of Rashi. Rabbi Yossi says, the Kasava calls Manchu hu b'mei zara zarhu. V'choshekein hai de b'mei grushahu, da'filu kishyula lo yehe ra'i. The Gemara Yevamos has a really interesting discussion where how does a future kohen, meaning it's a fetus, how is he viewed vis-a-vis kahuna? And so Rav Yossi is of the position that in utero, even though it's a kohen, and even if it's a male kohen, in utero it's viewed as a zar, and only receives the kedushas kohen only on emergence, only when it's born. And so that means that in utero it's already considered a zar, and that means then that being that it is going to be a shareholder in the estate, a future shareholder in the estate, already at the pregnancy point, it's going to ban and bar the avadim from eating truma. Okay, and our Mishnah is there to exclude ourselves from that position. That's a lot of questions at once. I'm really talented, but I can...
Not a grusha.
Right.
And not a vashi.
And a chanami.
So that you can say in the first part.
Agreed. The point's very well taken. Right? Just to reiterate, the czar status of an ubar would be true even if the kosher wife were to be carrying the czar.
And
correct.
So agreed. Doesn't give any credence to ubar. Doesn't do anything.
I wouldn't say that flatly.
What does it do? I mean, there's all these things. That
I understand. Okay. But in other words, the Mishnah's focus was not on the Uber. The Mishnah's focus is on what the halachic consequences are of being born. Yeah. Okay.
Question. We don't know if the Uber is a male or female at full birth. We're saying about Freya?
Yeah, right. In other words, in the sheet of Rav Yossi, right, if it's a female, she's not inheriting anything.
You don't know that until...
Agreed. Tosos takes a lot of exception. The pshat that I said in the Gemara was Rashi's pshat. Tosos takes a lot of exception. And I think, or whatever. I'll look for it later. But I think your point is being raised by Tosos.
Does the gender of the fetus impact whether the mother eats?
After
it's born, there's a baby girl entitled the mother to eat truma.
She's a bas kohen, yeah. In other words, she's a bas kohen. She's entitled to eat truma.
Okay.
Let's continue in the Gemara. We are now on the bottom of Memdalet Amud Aleph. Okay. V'nochol mancha. Okay, now we're talking about Yerusha inheritance. So the one day old can inherit and bequeath. So let's illustrate this really simply. Okay, so there were already a lot of other brothers that were born. And so now this baby was just born. And Rachmanis, on the day the baby's born, so the father died. And the point now is that the baby is going to be a shareholder and inherit part of the estate. That part's easy. Now what sounds like the Mishnah is saying is that the Mishnah is nochel, that's what I just described, and manchil. Now manchil means that if Rachmanis now, the baby died, so the baby was a owner as part of the estate, and so that means to say now that with the death of the baby, he's going to bequeath his shares of the estate over to his brothers. Now, if you're following me well, so you're hopefully wondering at this point in time, okay, I hear everything the Mishnah is telling me. That would have happened in either way. In other words, what would have happened, even if there was no baby, is that the brothers would have received it. So although what the Mishnah is telling me sounds significant, but practically speaking, it's no different. If the baby didn't inherit and bequeath, so we would have resulted in the same thing.
No, the share would have been different.
Why?
Because his share would reduce their share.
Okay, but what?
So therefore, once he bequeathed, it'll be the same.
The net is going to be the same for each one of them. Okay, so the Gemara is going to discuss.
The Bechor is going to get a double from him.
The Gemara is going to discuss. So no chalimman me'aviv, uman chalimman la'achiv me'aviv. So the Gemara just spelled it out the way I just presented. Okay, that he's going to inherit from his father's one day old. And if Rachmanis, the one day old, then dies, so then he's going to be bequeathed to his brothers. So ibai mavu liyarse v'ibai mi nei leiser liyarse. So the Gemara says, okay, but it's all going to be the same. The net is going to be the same. Amar sheshes nochel minichse aim lahanchil laachiv minaav. The Gemara says, okay. So in the scenario that we just described, you're right. But let's paint another scenario where now we're going to really see this play out in a practical way. Let's say the son inherits his mother. In other words, the mother had an estate, and the mother died. And now, so who's going to inherit the mother? So this baby that was just born. And now the baby shares a number of other siblings, so let's say from another mother. But they all have the same father. So now once the baby, once the mother dies, on the day the baby's born, the baby now has inherited all of his mother's estate. And then Rachmanis later that day, the baby dies. So now the entire Yerusha is going to go to
his siblings from
another mother. And so now we see this idea play out with a real practical ramification of what happens, where basically the mother's estate now is going to go to her, how do we say it here in English? To her stepchildren. Okay. V'dafka ben yom echad aval uber lo. So the Gemara says, okay, and this all plays out, meaning now we understand the point of our Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Only when the baby's born, but not while in utero. My taima, do meis bereisha. Veina ben yorishes imo bekever, because the Gemara makes the following assumption. When a mother dies pregnant, the Gemara's assumption is that first the baby dies, and then the mother dies. That is the order of mortality in the death of a pregnant woman. That is the Gemara's assumption, right? The modern biology, I don't know if we'll be in total agreement, but the Gemara makes that assumption. The Gemara's assumption is predicated on the fact that the assumption is that the baby's life force is a weaker life force, and so therefore, if there's going to be a critical blow and there's going to be death, so the baby dies first. So the Gemara says, with that assumption now, you understand that as long as the baby's now in utero, so what was the sequence of death? It was first baby died, then mother died. So then the baby can't inherit bekever, so that's the baby died first. Eina bein yorish es imo bekever. Lan chalachiv mina'av. The Gemara asks, Sini zatruva have uvda upirches atlas perchusei. The Gemara says, yeah, but empirically, here's what we saw. We saw that after the pregnant woman died, so we saw that there was twitching, there was some involuntary movement on the part of the baby. So you know the Gemara's answer. The Gemara says this a couple times. Okay, that involuntary twitching was just nerves and reflexes, and the Gemara says, but that's not life. And don't confuse that with life. Okay. We are now going to go back to our Mishnah. We want to say now another pshat in the Mishnah. So far we have offered a pshat in the Mishnah. The one day old is nochel manchel. So in the classic scenario where he was born, on the day that he was born, his father died, and then later that day he died. So then he's going to inherit his father, but he's going to pass it on to his brothers. And again, the Gemara said that can't be because what difference does it make? So the Gemara moved on to a different scenario, which we just explained. And now the Gemara is going to give another possibility of understanding the Mishnah. And somebody here said it, and the Gemara now is going to say, Shememayit Bechelik Bechorah. What he's going to do is he's going to decrease the amount of Bechor. V'amar mar b'rei d'Rav Yosef m'shmei d'Rava, ben shenolad achar misa tza'av, eino memayit Bechelik Bechorah. So the a son that's born after the death of the father is not going to decrease the amount of the Bechor. Now let's understand this. Here's what it means. Really interesting halacha. We know the Bechor gets Pishnayim. The formula for Pishnayim, it's actually really simple. Take the number of sons that there are, assign each one the variable X, and then, as far as the oldest son is concerned, 2X. And then...
You add one, then you divide.
What just happened?
The number of children, add one, then divide the inheritance by that, and then that becomes
take the number of children.
X plus one.
Okay, fine. And then the oldest one gets 2X.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, fine. So thank you. Thank you with the algebra help today. Okay. And then good. And that is going to assign the shares of how much the Bechor is going to get. However, the Gemara says that when we factor in the number of brothers there are, in terms of weighing that against the 2x of the oldest, so that is only going to be for the sons that are born while the father's alive. Let's say father impregnated the woman, right, as one of the later siblings. And unfortunately, the father died before the baby was born. So obviously, this baby stands to inherit the father, but he's not going to diminish, he's not going to detract from the Bechor two-time value of the Bechor. So, my time of Vialdu lo be'inan. Because if you look in the Parshas of Bechor, which is the very first Aliyah of Parshas Kiseitzei, the Pasuk says Vialdu lo banim, meaning that he had to actually experience the birth of their sons. B'sura masnahachi b'pumbedisa masnahachi. Now, in Pumbedisa, they say it a little bit differently. Amarmard b'rei d'Rav Yosef m'shmei d'Rava b'chor shenola l'achar misas aviv. Eino no tel pishnayim. A b'chor that's born after the death of the father, so he does not receive pishnayim. Now, this is not the same halacha. This halacha is a little bit different. This halacha is telling me that if I have a b'chor that's born after the death of the father, he is not going to be receiving pishnayim. Now, I know, I'm ready for this one. Now, if he was born after the death of the father, so who came after him? I was prepared for this one. So for this one, the mother had twins. In other words, when the mother was left pregnant with twins. Right, or he had more than one wife. Okay. No, he impregnated all those women.
Oh, he left all of them pregnant?
Yeah. Okay, so my time, Yakir Be'inan Va'aleka. So the Gemara says once again, because in order to be a recipient of the Bechor Pishnayim, so yeah, there has to be recognition of the father to the child, meaning they both have to live in this world. So now, we just said over a number of halachas regarding the ramifications of having a baby born after the death of the father. Number one, we said that the baby born after the death of the father is not detracting from the Pishnayim of the Bechor. We're also saying that if the Bechor is born after the death of the father, he's not receiving Pishnayim. And the Gemara says, interesting. And this is a halacha, meaning everything we just said. That's the halacha. So in order for there to be a son detracting from the Pishnayim of the Bechor, the father had to have lived at the same time of the son. In order for the Bechor to receive Pishnayim, so the father and the son had to live in this world together. Okay, so the horeg, the one who takes the life of a day old, so that is a horeg, that's ritzicha, and the person does it is going to be subject to the death penalty, and the Gemara has a drasha. The last line of the Mishnah. The death of a day old is kechatan shalem. It's like a chasan. What does that mean? The Gemara explains. Oh, so it's in reference to Avelus. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that in order for the death of an infant to register as a death legabe Avelus, the baby had to have survived 30 days. Why? Because if the baby did not survive 30 days, there is a distinct possibility that was not, the baby was an Avel. Meaning, even though it came out alive, but it came out really in critical condition, and so it doesn't qualify as a leida, and it doesn't qualify as a life, and there would not be avelos. Once it survives 30 days, so we now know that it categorically is not an nefel, and then rachmanis if it dies, so then and only then is the family going to be sitting shiva. And wait just one second. And so the Gemara is now pointing out that our Mishnah is not going like Rosh Hashanah and Gamliel, presumably. Because our Mishnah is saying that even a day old, there's a velus. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Our Mishnah could be consistent with Rav Shimon Gamliel. Why? Because our Mishnah is talking about where the pregnancy went full term. And we know that it went full term. The only consideration in terms of a baby being a nafal is that the baby's gestation was 8 months. And we all know, we've said this time and again, from the perspective of the Gemara, an 8 month is just simply not viable. And even if it comes out alive, it's just simply not viable. That is from the Gemara's perspective. And so, when it doesn't survive 30 days, so there's always that challenge or that question of, maybe it was an 8 month old. But now that it survived 30 days, so now we know that the baby came to full term, and the death represents a death of an actual human, of a nefesh. If, however, we know that the pregnancy was full term, so then what we know came out was a nefesh, and now its death, even on day one, would register as a mace and would require a velus. That's so. It could very well be that our Mishnah is consistent with Rav Shimon Gamliel.
But your wish is, you don't have to wait 30 days.
Right. That.
Yeah. Everything right. Makes sense.
Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end, but tomorrow we start with the Mishnah.